This is the 65th meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Today is Monday, March 28th, 3:05. Let the record show that we have Representative Collins, Herman, Zawacki, and Springer in attendance. Representative Cato is excused due to sickness. On the day's calendars, we have five bills, House Bill 318 and 319 on the Alaska Energy Efficient Home Program, House Bill 519 and House Bill 520, that is on the radon mitigation, and House Bill 522, an act relating to municipal planning and commissions. We might as well take them up in that sequence. And 318 and 319 are sister bills, and then 519 and 520 are sister bills, one being on the subject matter, the other one being the appropriations bill to accompany it. So we take up House Bill 318 and 319. That is on the Alaska Energy Efficient Home Program. This is the fourth reading of that bill. We had initially introduction by the sponsor and some witnesses. We had then subsequently two full teleconferences on a statewide basis. The bill has received widespread support from everybody. And is there anybody signed up yet that wanted to testify on it? Okay, I think the only question that has come to my mind, I have not heard any testimony that did not support the bill, ultimately from the standpoint that it was a very desirable and long overdue thing. I have heard some questions in regards to the energy program that the Department of Community and Regional Affairs is implementing now. I think I heard one or two testimonies where people asked that it be delayed, and we have, I think, two or three letters in our files asking that it not be delayed. So these bills, the way they are written right now, 318 is a bill laying out the substance and the subject matter, and then 319 is the appropriations bill asking for state funding primarily to educate the public, the builders, the users, and get standards and all that stuff done. Is there any more discussion or any questions on it?
I did have some concerns about the implementation of the standard, and I recognize that we need to get to say a higher standard eventually. And I'm just wondering if I understand that the CRNA has held off the implementation of their standard until October 1st. Is that right?
Well, we have Jim Plasman here from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs.
Okay. So it's been held off till October. I guess the concern that I have, and I'm not opposed to energy efficient homes, but when people buy a house, they buy it for lots of other reasons. You know, I think that probably energy efficiency is probably one of those lowest or considerations, if it's even that at all. And I guess my thought is that I'm wondering if given that, and given the length of time that we have to educate the public, if it would not be wiser to wait a little bit longer to educate the public so as not to create a problem. You know, having these homes built to the standard and then not really making a lot of difference. Because I think it is going to have to be sold to people. And that was my concern in wanting to delay the implementation of the standard. Because, I mean, I bought eight or six houses in my life that I've never once considered energy. I mean, I look for location, and if it looks like the house of my dreams and it's close to my family's needs and that, and I don't think I've ever considered that, and I don't think I would consider it anyway if it met all my criteria. And that was a concern that I have. I mean, it's important to the people who are interested in the issue, but to the general population, I don't think that it really is. And I just thought that perhaps we needed some more lead time to be able to educate the public, if that's indeed what we're going to do.
When Representative Collins, when you talk about lead time for implementation, are you referring to the R2000 program we are considering here, or are you talking about
the standards
that DCRA is mm-hmm. trying to implement now? Which mm-hmm. or both of them?
Well, primarily the standards that they're trying, the thermal standards that the department is trying to implement.
Well, I've had similar experiences. I think it makes two big differences to people here in the state. One of them is the locality where you're from. I've built personally two houses, one in Fairbanks, one in Nome, and I concerned myself a long time before that became a hit issue about, maybe because I'm an engineer, but I worked very, very thoroughly on thermal standards and the economic aspects between investment in the initial stage and then long-term savings. But I think you're absolutely right that the general public looks at the paint location and all those other things and don't concern themselves, but that's exactly part of the bill, is an educational process to show people. The argumentation, I think, wasn't so much around a lead time for implementation per se, but the argument was, if we adopt thermal standards, then we might as well adopt optimum thermal standards rather than the ones DCRA has, and that certainly is an argument. But at that point, where we're going in the right direction anyway, especially under the light that they're going to be administering primarily rural housing programs again, and that's where I think initially the biggest problems were, that they were just completely inadequate the way they were manufactured and dropped in. And if we pass that bill, I think it would be ultimately up to the executive branch trying to decide on the timetable when they're going to do what. I don't think that legislation is going to mandate anything. It's a kind of a volunteer program where the people in the agencies that implement larger housing programs see the wisdom of looking at the energy efficiencies of homes. Representative Savaki.
Yeah, I think you just added to. I think what happened, it seemed to be, is if we accepted the standards that is being implemented by this R2000 and these bills, that somehow this will suddenly become the thermal standards for the statewide. I think what we're looking at, and somebody can correct me either through CNRA or the gentleman sitting here, they're two separate issues. We have a thermal standard issue throughout the state right now that we seem to have a problem with in regards to geographics. What this is an education program. In fact, part of the trip that I took to the UConn was quite informational, because one of the units, and we heard it on the floor today, one of the units that we went through was a senior home. And not to believe a point, but there's some other in here. Went through a senior home that's being built. It'll be 62 units, 35,000 square feet, built with R2000 standards. It was built at probably about a third and a half the cost that we built units in the state. And the heating will be about a third the cost of any units that they even have in Whitehorse, let alone in Alaska right now. Lower cost in building the unit, which is surprisingly even for Alaska, because they have the same temperature either. But when you look at the R2000 standards, and the cost that they're building a unit, they are building it at a less cost than the state and putting in our 2000 standards. So something we need to educate the populace and realize that I think we can build units in the state at a lesser cost, at maybe 2 to 3 times the heating or the thermal standards that we presently have in the state. So after my trip to UConn, I see nothing wrong, and I think we ought to go on and try to educate the public as soon as we can, both for residential and especially commercial, specifically when this was commercial unit that's only going to cost $80 to $90 square foot versus our $150 to $200 in this state at lesser standards that this unit had there. So I see a lot of value in trying to get out there and educate the people, especially the industry out there. The sooner the better.
Well, the only other observation I have, and I voiced that concern before, is that with the larger scale housing programs, even if we adopt standards, they are still screwing things up. And what I mean by that is, in the rarest of cases, do they give due consideration to site specifics. And just giving some examples on the Seward Peninsula or out there where wind, especially in the winter, is a big factor in regards to energy conservation. They make a prototype in Seattle that has windows on all four sides, even though there may be triple pane. It has one sheet of viscreen hanging in there. And then they pre-manufacture it, they drop it in by helicopter, and there's no consideration given where the sun is in the winter, where the prevailing winds come from. They have the same size window on the north side where you can't see out and all that type of stuff. And I would have hope, which of course you can do here the way it's written, the commissioner can, that when they have those type of housing programs, they not just go out to bid on something that's on a statewide basis. With a little bit of variation, you can really simply give site-specific problems consideration, and that makes a big difference. But that just isn't done. So I personally, of course, the big thing is still the money, especially with the revenue forecast we had again. It doesn't say it's going to be financed. That is ultimately the way I see it, up to the finance committee to see if they have if they have the money to fund or what portion to fund. I personally don't have any more reason to hold the building committee, and I don't know if the members of the committee feel. What is the next referral, finance?
If we make a motion, can we make a motion on both the bills, 318 and 318?
Well, I was going to take them one after the other. Is there any more discussion or any questions? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to pass first a committee substitute for House Bill number 318. Out with individual recommendations.
Make a motion.
The motion is made. Is there any objections to it? Hearing none, so ordered. We take up next then the fiscal bill to that, House Bill 319. The fiscal note shows an initial appropriation of $1.721 million. Is there any discussion on that? What's the individual sections in that bill trying to do, Representative Furman?
I'm sorry, on 318, then, did we have a committee substitute, or were you?
Committee substitute was adopted.
Is the one that went wrong?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And House Bill 319 also is a committee substitute that was adopted, 3988. Are there any questions or discussion on that bill? Hearing none, I entertain a motion to pass committee substitute for House Bill 319 out of committee with individual recommendations.
So
moved. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Next two bills we're taking up is House Bill 519 and House Bill 520. That's on 519, an act establishing a revolving loan fund for radon mitigation and providing for an effective date. And then 520, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs for the radon mitigation revolving loan fund and providing for an effective date. That bill has also been here before. We had extensive testimony on it. I think staff has checked with some banks on that too, have you? What did you find out?
They said that since they are the servers of most loans, that they have no indication from the lending institution that they had any requirements on it, and that individuals can buy testing if they have questions about houses that they buy or sell on the radon. I talked to two bankers in town, and neither one of them knew anything about radon in houses. And there was an article report from Fairbanks on that they did have quite a number of houses that did have radon in them. But even checking there's no policy on liability, no policy on that, or an indication from them that any was forthcoming. They said that the public need to be educated on it, and it was a new issue.
So if even, you say in some cases, even where it was known, they don't have any kind of banking regulation or anything to address that at the present. Okay, also in your file is some, it looks like a Russian rocket launcher or something. There's a pretty interesting article here on radon roadblock. Some guy in Winnipeg had a problem, and he made an interesting trap with a ball in it. Is that in the folders? Okay. That's the only observation I had. If you get that ball in wrong, then everything goes the other way, and maybe flooding the basement is a good radon mitigation stuff can't come in, nothing can come out. Well, it's definitely an identified problem, of which I guess in general terms and from the standpoint of industrial standard, not too much is known from a standpoint of how widespread the knowledge is. And of course, one of the problems is, like we have brought out in the hearing processes, I think there are quite a few questions open, and that is the question of liability, either when you start to know that problem exists, and I think there are probably still a technical problem in individual cases. However, we have heard in the testimony process that from the state of the art, quite a few cases can be from a technical standpoint solved, or at least the levels can be reduced. I think the bill addresses a problem which we have in some identified areas in the state. I have mixed feelings too about what may come out of it if the bureaucracy decides to start testing on a wide scale level. I can just see a nightmare that makes the present housing crunch look like no problem. Representative Collins.
The question I have is, how about methane gas? My understanding is that there are some houses that have been built over landfills and some subdivisions, and they're having some seepage of the methane gas. And, you know, are we going to be able to go in and do a loan fund for people who mitigate the methane gas problem? And the question is, it that big of a problem?
Well, with methane gas, it has one advantage over radon. When you turn the switch, it just you
right.
Become airborne. the problem solves itself. With radon, it doesn't do it. I think Merle Field is a good example. Yeah, Representative Savacki.
Yeah, I think you touched on. And even at the last meeting, touched on some of the concerns in the gentlemen that were on the teleconference. It sounded like they were doing a very efficient job in correcting the homes or the residents through the Fairbanks area at a fairly reasonable cost. In fact, I think they said a low of a few hundred dollars up to a high of some of $3,000 or $4,000. But yet, I think the concern we've got to look at, part of it says we'll establish upwards to about $10,000 per home for radon recovery, but we take a look at the number of units that they tested initially versus what could be out there. You want to talk about a bureaucracy and a cost of the state, and I'll expand on the same conversation. Even the people who were testing at Fairbanks and have the business out there were saying that there really, at this point, is no true and adequate level of testing radon in itself. They really don't know, other than what some research they've got out there, but the research isn't improving. So they really don't know what the levels are in regards to what is, you know, a detriment to one individual over another, or how much radon in the home. I think if we were to implement a program without knowing this full research, and just going in and saying this level of radon is what we will give people a loan on, we're just opening ourselves for literally thousands upon thousands of dollars in the state. And I'm afraid it'll just go right off the scale in regards to how much money will be thrown in this. And that's why I've got a key problem with it. But the technology that's not out there to prove exactly what the radon levels are and they're dangerous, and then they go in and say, we'll give loans to individual homes, where do we stop? How much testing do we do, and how many homes are we going to find that have radon? I just think it's going to be a huge expense out there.
Yeah, maybe I have another, you know, another concern, and that's in the same line, and that is the seasonality, or how constant are those readings and levels. I think from the testimony we heard from Fairbanks, it looked like they were able to mitigate a lot of the problems, and in some cases to eliminate them, but of course that's from case to case different. But on the other hand, I don't I don't think we can overlook that there is a health problem there. And some of that money at least can be used then to do some testing and hopefully do some research. As if a program like that gets implemented, there's no question about it that our knowledge level is going to increase. You know, I remember when it was with water testing that way. In the early 60s, you could just punch a well and do whatever you wanted to do, and nobody cared if there was arsenic in it or something. It was up to you. But at one point or another, it became apparent that the health safety standards for potable water had to be considered. And I think we're in the same boat here. I'm worried about the bureaucracy that may follow. And I'm worried about what happens then to the person whose home is found to has a radon problem. There's a huge financial loss connected with it. But it's just like with AIDS people. Some of them, they don't want to be tested. They don't want to know they have it, rather than know and can't do anything about it. And that's nearly a similar case there.
Chairman.
Yes, Representative Mackey.
Kind of the comments that Dave made just a little while ago. And again, I guess maybe it's just my feeling, it's kind of like a perceived health problem out there, because when you've got a majority or several of the banks are suddenly throwing their arms up and saying, we don't even know what you're talking about. I mean, it's something we've never heard about. I think for us to implement a program and dump in $500,000 or possibly more into a perceived problem. Sure, we know that radon is in the homes, and there may be a problem depending on what levels are considered to be dangerous. But to start implementing a program and putting loans out there, $500,000, and if we say even if we have each home, and let's face it, if you're going to set out small loans, you're probably going to have an individual want to get the maximum loan, as we've seen in all of our other loans out there. $10,000 and $500,000 is not very many homes out there, 50, and if you cut that in half, that's 100. I just see a serious problem in regards to this thing getting completely out of line of a perceived medical problem that even the banks don't even consider to be out there in the first place in regards to whether this home's going to be worth a value or not be worth a value.
Are there any other people signed up who wanted to witness, wanted to testify? Well, here on page 1, paragraph 2, they lay out that 6 picocuries at the level which the EPA recommends that action be taken. So I don't know where EPA comes up with those standards, but at least there is a standard established. Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, you can join us. Just identify yourself.
I'm Catherine Merritt, and I'm Aide to Representative Davis, who's in finance, and he's headed this way. I want to clarify one thing. We did have a draft CS that changed the picocuries from 6 to 4, since that was the correct EPA guideline this time.
No, I know we don't have it. And then number 3. Is that eliminated or is that just highlighted with yellow? What is that?
That's an addition on the CS.
Okay. Oh, I see. That's a new paragraph. Yes.
I have the changes if you'd like them. Yeah. I don't
know. I think in your packet there is that work draft on the CS. It's not?
Mm-hmm. 1.1.
Legally, 1.1 with a circle around it. Oh, I see. You don't have them all highlighted.
There was an addition of a finding, a change from 6 to 4 picocuries, and the other change was on the second page. It gave more flexibility to the department in response to the chairman's concern about seasonality. Sid Heidersdorf, the state radiologist's office, mentioned that if you had one of the tests that only goes over 3 days,
that you should have to have a higher reading because it wouldn't be an average over a season. It wouldn't be as reliable, so that maybe if you had used a very short test, you should have to have, say, 12 picocuries, and if you used a three-month test, maybe 8 picocuries, and if you'd done annual average, down to the 4 picocurie level. And so this change, rather than saying for eligibility that 4 picocuries would make you eligible, it now says that the department will establish that figure through regulation. And that was in response to the position paper from Department of Health and Social Services.
I lost you somewhere along the line. 14% is the indoor, right? That's very much. Survey probably exceeded 4 picocuries, the level at which the Environmental Protection Agency recommends action to be taken to reduce the level. Okay, it doesn't spell anything out, regulatory.
I'm sorry, this is on the second page.
On the second
the
page,
other
okay.
Change there. See the black under. There's a change on line 14
that's
through
not highlighted
19.
Okay. That's a new paragraph. On page 2, line 14, determine the regulation eligibility for loans based on the measurement of radon within the borrower's residence. Eligibility must be established based on a sliding scale that inversely relates the minimum measurement level to qualify for a loan to the length of the time period during which the radon measurement was taken. Well, it just says basically that if you take more than one reading, then it's a minimum measurement level that qualifies, but it doesn't spell out what length of time is involved or anything, right?
It doesn't, but it means that the longer the time you measured it over, the lower level of radon you have to have. So if you've taken an annual test that took a whole year and took that seasonality into account, then you can be down at the very low levels and still get a loan. But if you've only if you've taken a relatively short, say a 3-day test, you're going to have a higher radon reading to be eligible for a loan. It doesn't specify exactly how long, exactly what reading.
Yeah, I remember in the discussion, we think Representative Savacki voiced concern, which I also had, in geologically unstable areas where you have, for example, we don't know the influences of earthquakes or shifts of subsurface terrain, the groundwater flows or things like that, we don't have a technical handle. I don't think it distracts from the validity of the bill. It just, in our opinion, creates a technical problem from the operational aspect. When are you going to take a reading? In some cases, I'm sure they're going to go in and take, and when they make initial measurements and they get readings, and I'm sure if they're pretty high, that will suffice. If somebody comes in with an 8 or 10 or a 12, they're going to be worried automatically. They're not going to wait a whole year and take readings all the way around to see how that fluctuates or how it changes on a seasonal basis. They may do that as a follow-up to see how well their mitigation remedies are working, but not to get a loan. Okay, and then the other changes on page 3, that's on the eligibility. On line 10, the measurement of the radon in the homeowner's residence exceeded the numbers of picocuries determined by program regulations under Alaska statutes 4447652. What?
That refers right back to the paragraph we were just reading.
All right, okay. Well, is there anything else which you want to offer that you think has not been covered? I think all the committee members here have a pretty clear picture from the standpoint what problems the bill is trying to address. I think we had some good practical testimony out of Fairbanks from university people, and I think it was it Mr. Seifert. He's not only an engineer, but he had some problem in his home himself and is working with that. I think what we as a committee have to do, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
I think what we as a committee have to do is concerns ourselves here with two things. Number one, should the state be in that business at the present at all, considering both the government's obligation in regards to healthcare and health standards, and at the same time in regards to the liability and problems that may involve the people who are unfortunate enough to have radon found in their homes. Then the second question is, of course, then the funding question along with it. We have quite a few bills where the committee feels that the monetary amounts that are originally put in are insufficient. But then, if that is the case, and ultimately subsequent legislations have at least a chance to address that problem on a year-to-year basis with funding levels, but at least there would be some mechanism to address some real gross ones on a priority basis. I think in the Fairbanks and Healy area at least we have had some pretty extreme cases where if that type of a loan program would be available, I think it probably could do a lot to help from a health standpoint. And the reason I think that is when people like Mr. Seifert go ahead and do it with their own resources, it's not something frivolous. They apparently feel strong enough about it that they took their own resources without a possibility for a loan to address the health problem. I think we're at the a point where we are going to either kill the chicken or lay some eggs. Representative Slovacki.
Well, then again, I guess maybe just two more comments. The first one again is repetitive, basically. You know, we tend to have a state problem or perceived problem in regards to radon. Yes, there is a problem with radon coming in, but yet there really isn't any proof of how it's really affecting the health. I know there's a list there that says it's 5 times somebody smoking and 10 times and 50 times. But again, there's no proof that it indeed is a medical problem. Going back to Mr. Seifert, if you recall, I think he said he spent something like 15 months really finding out what his problem was and trying to seal this and repair that. I see that if you put these loans out there, you're going to find the same problem with any of these homes that you go in. You know, somebody has a high radon problem, so somebody comes in and says, well, this is what you need here. You spend $500 and you find out and you take another radon reading, whether it's a week later or a month later, and you suddenly realize that you still have that problem and you're trying to bring it down to a supposed acceptable level that still does not have that much scientific evidence in and of itself. I just have a problem with a perceived hazard that we supposedly have with untested scientific evidence, and the cost. I think you're just going to go off the charts in regards to how to bring, quote unquote, this radon level down. And again, I repeat, we are in Alaska. We have earthquake areas. We have a hell of a lot of other things in unstable areas. You can seal up your house, and a month later, I will guarantee you, many homes will have these same cracks. And they've even said even the smallest crack will allow radon to come through again. How many times is somebody going to go in and inspect and take a radon reading? How many times and how many cracks are you going to continue to seal? How many loans are you going to put out for each individual home? How large is this program going to get before we realize that we can't afford it?
Well, I read you loud and clear. Representative Davis has joined us. Just a couple answers. So, number one, I think there is no doubt that radon as a health hazard is scientifically established, simply because of the validity of influences of radioactive materials on any cell. How big is that program to go? It's going to get exactly as big as the state funds it. That is not a problematic thing to me, but what I have problems with, considering that there are going to be funding limits, whom are you going to give priority to when you start out and there are some, I mean, there's a vast percentage of the population, just like the bankers, are not even aware what their add-on is or what it does. And with a type like any program that starts out, there's an education process, the press picks it up, people start to pick it up, and then it starts to mushroom at that point. I think on the beginning, let's say the DCRA people establish a hearing period or an application period, and those applications start to come in, then all of a sudden more people are going to concern. There are going to be people that are going to get into that business, just like with any other program that comes out. People are going to get in the business, they're going to advertise for radon testing and so on. And at one point or another, I agree 100% with you, the money is not going to be sufficient. There's going to be predictably a lot more demand than is there in the funding. Then it becomes an administrative problem, who is going to get preference. And like you say, in each one of those cases has to be basically evaluated on its own merits, because technically, geologically, and just from a standpoint of the environment, each case is going to be a little bit different, and it's going to take a lot of individual work. But whom are you going to give priority to? I can see it, for example, you're going to have some cases where it's going to be 8 or 9 or 10, and then the funds run out, and then a bunch of people come in with 14 or 16 or some real high readings, and they're going to have real problems. Representative Davis, you had your hand up. I think you wanted to make some comment.
Well, I apologize for being late, Mr. Chairman.
Your staff done a good job to defend you, so you're, maybe you're going to screw it up by saying more.
I will proceed carefully. There is some people here in the audience that are from the construction business, and although they're not here to testify on this legislation, they indicated to me, some banks are aware of this problem, and there is EPA limits of levels that people cannot work in mines if they have to. I think the radon reading has to be, if it's above 20, they shut the mine down. So I think there is a recognized limit of exposure that it is a health issue. But this certainly isn't meant to be a panacea for all the problems that are out there. And I think that's the committee's correct. We don't know what the extent of the problem is yet. And hopefully it's not going to be, the readings are certainly an indication of a serious problem. We've only begun to identify the problem, and one of the things that we're going to be doing in the Department of Natural Resources, that there's federal funds available to try to identify the extent of just how serious the problem is. And I don't know if you were on that delegation that went to Canada, but Whitehorse is another community they found to have very high levels of radon, because it's also a high radioactive area. So northern climates, it looks like, in mineralized areas, are more prone to this than other places, because of the fact that we spend a lot of time indoors, and also the fact that we've spent a lot of money and time trying to make them real tight so that they don't breathe. And there's problems to that. How serious and how extensive the problem is, we don't know yet, and that's very accurate. Mr. Chairman, with those words of caution that you just gave me, I think I will go my mouth shut unless there's other questions.
Representative Sobacki.
I appreciate you bringing up my Yukon trip, because it's something I just suddenly overlooked and forgot about. This actually question was asked to the legislators of the Yukon area, and their comment back to us was that there really wasn't that big of a problem in regards to radon. There's some isolated areas, but it could be taken care of by the individuals. And if I could mention, and I guess my question is, why does the state need to invest $500,000 if the cost ranges from 4 to upwards, because these people were saying in Fairbanks, the most expensive, I think they said, was $4,000. If an individual did go and buy the $20 piece of radon equipment and test it for radon in their home, and they found out that they had a radon problem and they wanted to correct it, why could they not go to a bank or a lending institute and get a loan through them instead of having to come through the state?
Chairman, and actually I did, we our community had the benefit of having some of the people from the Yukon Territory, excuse me, and the Northwest Territories in our community just a couple weeks ago, and I discussed it with them also. But the problem is probably that people in Yukon don't have, that we do have, is we've got a lot of people with negative equity. That it's going to be a much greater difficulty for them to go to the bank than to someone that doesn't have that problem. But we personally have that problem in Anchorage, I mean in Fairbanks, and probably in Anchorage now with a lot of people that have families that can't sell their home because of the financial picture that we're all faced with. They can't sell their home, can't move out of their home, currently can't trade their home, they've got a family, they have negative equity, they've got a health situation that they'd like to rectify, and there's currently no place to turn right now. That's what this legislation, if I could continue, Mr. Chairman, that's what this bill is trying to attempt to address, is people that are in a negative equity situation, not totally, but people that don't have other avenues to turn to, and need to mitigate the problems that are in their homes, and they can't leave their homes unless they walk away from them.
That's good. I guess my comment is, if they can't afford to borrow from a financial institute, how are they going to pay back a loan, or start to pay back a loan to the state? If they can't borrow from one, how can they borrow from the state and expect to pay it back if they're in a negative equity in the first place?
Well, negative equity, I frankly think there's probably a lot of people in the legislature that have negative equity. It doesn't mean that you're in financial trouble yourself. It means that your house is worth less than the value is. And that all that means for me and for other people is you can't get a loan on that. There's no equity in there to get a loan. But it doesn't mean you can't make the payments or any of that. It just means that you're not in a situation to go to the bank and get an equity loan to take care of the mitigation of the house. That's all this bill does. And there, it's written in there that they have to first go for a loan and not be able to get one. So it does narrow the focus of the intent of this loan is for.
I guess my question then is, how can the state be guaranteed they're going to get their loan back? I mean, if we don't require a negative equity, if they can't put their home down, as you're trying to imply, as loaning power, where's our guarantee to get that loan back? We won't have any standards as to how to loan this money out?
I didn't say there wouldn't be any standards. All I'm saying is that it's very nice if you have a positive equity situation. You go in the bank and get a loan on that. But there's other avenues. I don't know if you're a member of a credit union. I am. I can go to the credit union and get a loan, a $4,000 signature loan, just by appearing there. But not everyone has that ability to go to that, have those avenues. This is one avenue to give people that are in a situation where it doesn't mean we have to give bad loans. It doesn't say that's not a certain provision of this. All this is saying is a loan program for people that can't get a loan through the bank on an equity loan on their house. They would have to be turned down. They would then have this as something that they could go to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to find the reference, and maybe it's I read for having the Home Craftsman program and all of that was that it would help mitigate something like the radon problem. Is there something in our bill pack that indicated that when we looked at all the reasons why we wanted to support the Craftsman program, is that one of the things that we do would be to help mitigate the radon problem? My thought is, do we really need this bill? If we're going to pass the 318, and that's going to be funded. And it's too bad that we have, and if you look on page 1 on 5, line 23, it says, techniques such as vapor barriers, air-to-air heat exchangers, and certain home pressurization strategies may be used to mitigate radon in the homes, and that's part of the whole community Craftsman program, is it?
Like the branch sponsor has expressed, one of the big problems is our everybody has a desire to make buildings pretty airtight up here, simply to keep the heat in. Mm-hmm. With the R2000, they mostly have an air exchange system mm-hmm. built in, which helps a lot to minimize mm-hmm. radon problems. So that's right. The R2000 is not, it has side benefits like that along with it. But I've seen it, like for example, in Nome, they have put homes in with air exchange systems, and the first thing they're going to do is plug those up again, because people have a tendency to keep things that are not functioning well, trying to keep them functioning. Like they have typically louver type air exchange systems. They work fine in static air. As soon as the wind starts blowing, they don't work so well anymore. But in theory, that's right. I don't have that big a problem with the revolving loan fund, because at least in theory, it's a self-sustaining fund. But you know, community and regional affairs has a fairly healthy operating fiscal note there with $80,000 a year level, and that is of course a direct drain on the treasury for administering the loan program. Representative Collins.
Representative Zawacki helped me find it. It's in this packet for 318, but the reference is that the, and if I may read it, is the is about better, the Alaska Craftsman Home Program is about better built homes and people's health, safety, and comfort. The Consumer Federation of America estimates that poor indoor air pollution costs this country $100 billion annually, including with estimates as high as 20,000 radon-induced deaths over a year nationally. The mitigation methods for indoor air pollution taught in the Alaska Craftsman workshops and embodied in the voluntary standards are sorely needed. Radon is only one of over 100 indoor pollutants found in homes that cost people money and affect health. And the concern that I have is if we're establishing, I mentioned methane earlier, but if we're establishing a program to mitigate radon, we know about it, but what about these other 99 pollutants? You know, are we putting ourselves in a position where maybe we should be finding out about all of them instead of just radon? And, you know, can we handle the problem once we identify it? And that's the concern that I have with a bill that just addresses the radon. I mean, is it really going to accomplish anything? And given that we've already taken some preventive steps with the Home Craftsman Program, I wonder if the bill is really necessary.
Representative Davis, how are you?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure how to address this, really. This, we're talking 318 is grants, and 319 is special appropriation. And on those are appropriations to certain people, and as you see, the majority of those appropriations are construction of HUD housing. It's not. It isn't addressing that someone that wants to make a loan that they're going to pay back at market rate. And we're talking about grants here. And so I'm not saying that, maybe we can make grants to these people too, but these are people that are interested in taking out a loan that's going to be paid back, part of a revolving loan. It's not, the intent of this legislation is not to give somebody something, it's to provide an opportunity that they don't have currently to take care of a situation that's happening in homes and mineralized areas of the state. There's places, I'm saying Collins wasn't there, but Fairbanks isn't the only place that's happening. And they've only started to identify that, but it's happening in the Denali Park area, the Circle Hot Springs, Manly Hot Springs, Northway. There's other places around the state, and frankly, we don't know just how many areas around the state yet, because we have done just a scant look at what areas have radon. And I sincerely predict that there's going to be additional legislation which will be addressing this in the future in terms of standards as far as selling a home, getting tested. And we're in the meeting, I believe, where this came up. But there's homes that have, sale of those homes have been stopped because of the presence of radon. People have not been able to sell their homes, and people that are considering purchasing homes because of the presence of radon, to stop the sale.
And what percentage of the homes that are being sold is a radon check being made?
Pardon?
You said that there were homes that people couldn't sell their homes because of the presence of radon, and my question is, what percentage of the homes are checked for radon?
Well, there's no standards at all. We have not. There's no provision. A realtor doesn't have to have a check for radon, and or. But all I'm saying is, people, as public awareness increases, people are asking, what is the radon reading in this home that I'm about to purchase? And they check, and that has stopped the sale of home when people found out there is a presence of radon. And I think there's going to be legislation. I haven't really looked at it. There's other states like Pennsylvania. There has to be checks for radon before the home is sold. It has to. And there's provisions in the contract when you purchase a home that this home indeed doesn't have a presence of radon, or I know that the presence of radon is in this home. There's other states have already addressed this. It's a relatively new health issue that people didn't know about until just several years ago.
In the little paragraph that I read out of that binder, there was an indication that there are at least 100 pollutants in a home. Do you know if anybody is doing any kind of a study to determine what those pollutants are and what their impact on health is?
No, I really do not. I'm sure that Cooperative Extension is doing some work on this. Radon, as I don't know if it was mentioned earlier, they attribute about 1/4 of the lung cancer death to radon. I don't know if that's a high number or whatever. And I don't know if they've done a lot of research to find out, you know, is Colorado, which has a very high incident of radon in their homes, the people that has a higher incident of lung cancer than another community. I don't know. I'm not an expert on this, Representative Collins. I'm somewhat familiar with it just because I've spent some time on this legislation, but I've got a long ways before I have real knowledge on this whole issue.
Mr. Chairman, what I'm just trying to do is get an idea of the scope of the problem, you know, and if we, and I guess if we have, said 100 pollutants, is there a possibility that there are pollutants out there that are worse than radon and we just don't know about them?
I know that in some areas, industrialized areas, they're checking for sulfurs, they're checking for sewer gases, methane-type gases, and so on. They're doing that. They're undoubtedly. They're also checking for dust particles, asbestos fibers, you know, that type of stuff. I think in Alaska, generally radioactive stratas are usually connected with mineralized, from a geological standpoint, with mineralized areas. And of course, Alaska is full of mineralized areas. But what we have going in our favor is that only few areas in the state are suitable for basement-type construction. Like even, for example, Seward Peninsula or most of the outlying rural areas are highly mineralized. They're all in permafrost, and consequently, the houses are basically up in the air. And because of that type of an air exchange system where the house doesn't sit in the ground, you have comparatively little problem, even so radon may be present in the ground, and if you would build a basement in it, you probably would have problems. In other mineralized areas like in Pennsylvania, where you have a typical basement house type of construction, you have a much higher incident rate. The problem I see here is we probably don't have a good handle on it yet. We have taken some tests, and indeed we found some problem areas, but how widespread it is in Alaska, I think we don't know yet. And in regards to if there are worse pollutants right now than radon, I think from case to case, that may be the case. I think you infrequently hear about death to the carbon monoxide gases or to the methane gases and other gases that are hard to detect because they're odor free. Representative Furman, I think you had your hand up.
I just want if the sponsor could restate, you know, simply the problem, like the chairman said, you know, it seems like it's a widespread problem, but we don't know that much about it. And I just wondered, you know, like how many homes have been tested, you know, who's doing the testing and things like that.
There's several companies in Fairbanks that are doing the testing. DGGS has a machine It's a special monitoring machine, and they've tested a number of homes. What's happening right now, Representative Herman, is they have these little discs which are sent out to Virginia, and unlike the data we get when people drill wells, that's all turned over, and that's public information. What we have now is information that the DGGS has, and information that these individual companies have, but we don't have some of that information that sets in Virginia or wherever that is sent to, comes back to the people that are testing here, but the state doesn't have that. I do have a list of, I was just given this, and there's been, Department of Health and Social Services has a partial list of homes that have been tested, and there's like 84 have been tested in Anchorage. There's been some tested in Eagle River, Fairbanks, all across the state. There's been some tests, but only a handful. But there has been some homes tested in 50 different communities around the state. And the ones that turned up highest, quite frankly, are McKinley Park and Fairbanks. And some in Arctic Circle, too.
Okay, and then some follow-up questions then. And what did you say when about the bank, the loans, you know, going through a bank? What, is that some problem there that it couldn't get funding through a bank?
Well, that's the issue with that, sir, is that we wanted to make sure that the people first went to a bank, that people were in a situation where they aren't taking state funds. If they had access and first to go to a bank, they'd have to first be turned down to take care of this.
Okay, and then some other questions or comments maybe. You know, we have the, what is it called, the Arctic Research Commission. And I think that they're working on some health issues. You know, also we've got the cooperative, you know, health agreement with Soviet Union, and I think, you know, maybe we could pursue some of those kind of things. You know, the governor's hoping that he'll get a science foundation. I think, you know, there's so much room for a lot of pulling out this information. You know, the University of Alaska spends millions of dollars on research, and you know, how applied is that research? You know, we always wonder about that. So I think there's probably a lot of avenues around for doing something like this. And also, you know, we did away with the small business loan program quite a few years ago. I don't believe there's one now. And maybe bringing something like that back, where it's a small business loan, plus, you know, putting this in might be a better way of trying to, you know, say, okay, here's some money. I mean, it might be a better way to sell this program is to say that, okay, they can get this out of a small business loan.
Mr. Chair, these are not small business people, and we're not trying to give loans to small businesses here. I hope that there's additional research on this whole issue and on how to better construct homes. Part of the problem is, as the chairman said, is people are building basements in areas they shouldn't be. And you shouldn't build a basement on a highly mineralized area, or at least make sure that if you do build that basement, that you seal it and you take all the precautions necessary. It's much better to have some kind of a structure where you're not sitting right on top of a bunch of rocks that have radon gas coming out. But you can't. That's sort of prospective. You can't. We have individuals, small families, whatever that currently have very high incidence of radon in their homes. This legislation is an attempt to address the problem we have now, not how we can solve it in the future. I concur that there needs to be additional research on how we can solve this, but this is an attempt to deal with the situation we have right now with individuals that are currently not in the position to go to the bank with a positive equity and get involved.
Okay, I think what we do is I would like staff to get with I think Health and Social Services and DEC, I'm intrigued by the same question you are, and that is radon is an identified problem gas. Get with them and find out. In that one report, it said that there are 100 other bad things. And find out what other incidents of health hazards they have identified in Alaska homes, and let us know, and then we go from there. Representative Collins?
I would suggest that a contact, too, would be John Middaugh, in case he has any information, and he certainly would know on a national level, the CDC, if there's any information in Atlanta in terms of what has been identified. My concern that, you know, maybe we have a bill that, instead of having a bill that would establish a revolving loan fund for radon, that we would have a bill that would establish a revolving loan fund for to help people mitigate those harmful things, whatever they are, you know.
That's what I was getting at. Representative Davis.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's pretty simple. You take what's in essence a Geiger counter and figure out whether they have radon in their house.
Oh, sure.
Not.
Yeah.
It's a little more difficult to ascertain all those other 99 other possible harmful things. And I don't know. I'd be glad to work with the committee on this, but I would think that's something that also could be addressed. And it goes next to Health and Social Services.
Has that got the HESC committee referred? I thought that one goes to finance too, right? Fast, right? It goes to HESC. Yeah, I would have no problem if we attach a letter or something. I'm intrigued the same way you are, that there may or may not be in Alaska other problems area, but between the university and between the departments that are concerning themselves with public health, like DEC and HESC, and you mentioned some other institute.
John Middaugh.
I think they probably would, I mean, if anybody, they would have heard of other problem areas.
There's one more thing, too. You've mentioned it at both meetings. Even if you have the level 4 to 20, what link? That's something that hasn't been answered either. Put the Geiger counter in the home or the radon equipment in the home, suddenly you flip it on and it says you've got 10 PCIs in there, you automatically assume there's a problem. But we don't know what the length, you know. How long is radon in that home? When will it disappear? What type of, or what time of the year does it show up, if it shows up at all? I mean, if it's there, it showed up. But what time of the year? I think there's a lot of questions that aren't answered. And I think we'd be doing ourselves a disservice if we just pass it along to the committee and expect them to, you know, find all of these answers. I think we need to get some of this out of the way.
Mr. Chairman, you're calling this, but we're talking about a loan here. If someone's someone has a reading and they want to get a loan, and we're not talking about giving somebody something. They have, if I'm going to spend $4,000 of my own money, I'm going to make sure that I'm going to make sure I'm not just going to have one test and then run down to the bank and get it and take care of it. I want to make sure, I think there's some built-in provisions on this
Well, I don't think it's quite that simple. From the state standpoint, we just pointed out that there are a lot of people with negative equities in their homes right now, which can't go to the bank and get a loan. And those will be exactly the customers who would come to the state right away and get a loan. So you got a loan that's secured with a negative equity in the home. Also, it's not just that it's a revolving loan fund. We're still talking about $80,000 to administer a comparably small but difficult loan program. So it's not that simplistic. I would feel a whole lot better to make that a generic bill if there are other pollutants that are identified in the state and put it together. And so that, do you have it? You can within a week contact those people, find out. We don't need a lot of backup data right now. What we need to know is if there are other agents that have been identified in homes that fall within that category of 100 bad agents, and what they are, and then we certainly will work together with the prime sponsor. But before we leave off, we might as well adopt the committee substitute, or you want to wait? If we just want to, we can just wait and see if we want to add anything. Mm-hmm. We just wait then. Thank you. Okay, I want to get at least the first reading then on 522.
Never trust the camera. Perfect time.
Well, especially if it's cut off on the end.
The radon time.
It used to be green, but he lives in a radon home. See what happens. Okay, well, we have in front of us, there is already a committee substitute, or is that a redraft?
Proposed.
That's a proposed committee substitute.
Hmm?
Yeah, I ended up with her file. That's discrimination.
I have base file accidentally, too, sometimes.
That's okay.
My apologies.
Well, mine was right here, and then it was gone.
Well, I don't have...
Oh, you can use mine. Go ahead.
I know, because I'm going to make those notes in here, and those are mine, all right. One cup of coffee today to the finder of my file.
Yeah, it could be, because I have one of them.
Okay. Because you might want to make some notes or something to keep in there.
I thought I had one here.
Okay. We're ready to do business.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Give the introduction.
Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Representative Mike Miller. I represent House District 18, which includes the North Pole area and it's the south end of the Fairbanks Armstrong Borough. House Bill 522 was introduced by myself at the request of many residents in the Fairbanks Armstrong Borough, and these individuals were frustrated with the Borough Planning Commission, and they'd like to see the membership of the Planning Commission decided by the general voters. The current law requires that every first and second class borough must establish a planning commission with membership approved by the mayor and confirmed by the assembly. The original version of 522 would have amended it so that the membership of this commission would have been elected. However, realizing that that may not be workable, and there was much opposition to that by many of the boroughs and around the state that would have been affected by this, we have worked with Senator Fanning's office, which has an identical bill over on the Senate side, to come up with a committee substitute, which is in each of your package. So at this time, I understand that your staff and the staff of the Senate CRA committee is working on a possible joint meeting between the two committees to hear this bill. So at this time, I guess I would like to request your consideration adopting the proposed committee substitute and then holding the matter until the joint hearing. And I guess with that, I'd open it up to any questions.
Okay, thank you. Just a question of staff first. Are we looking at any concrete dates yet or doing that?
We're looking at April 12th right now.
Okay, is that language of the CES the way it is in front of us right now? Has that been worked on to the point where it is compatible or acceptable with them?
I understand that it is exactly the same as the Senate version, only the Senate version is a sponsor substitute to the bill. We have another committee substitute.
Okay.
But they are identical.
Okay, well, if they're identical, then I think we adopt that CS right now, and I entertain a motion to that effect.
Make a motion to accept committee substitute for House Bill 522.
Any objection to that? Hearing none, we are working then on CS for House Bill 522, today 28th. Okay, are there any questions to the prime sponsor? I just have a... That whole bill covers only the planning commission function for first and second class boroughs, right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Basically, we took it from the original statute, which, and the original statute set it, all that it covered was first and second class boroughs. It didn't cover any other type of borough.
Right now, they have planning functions provided in the statutes anyway.
That is as a
borough local government function.
Right.
But it doesn't spell out the mechanisms to execute the planning function?
To tell you the truth, Mr. Chairman, I really did not check that because we were just pulling off from the sections that were dealing with the first and second class borough, which the borough of Fairbanks is a second class borough, and we were basically dealing with that situation that was happening in Fairbanks. And the Title 29 that we passed, though, I guess 3 or 4 years ago, there are many sections in it, and the section that we were dealing with just dealt with first and second class boroughs. It did not deal with home rule boroughs.
Okay. Any further questions before we hear some testimony? Representative Furman.
This is just off the committee could opt into.
Yes, it is. It does not mandate that there be an election. If the borough just has this overwhelming desire to give the choice to the people, they can do it by ordinance, which would go to the voters and to approve.
Representative Sabaki.
Yeah, I just have a couple of questions, and I apologize, I haven't read through all the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Some of the concerns they had in regards to elections, and sometimes I get surprised that these elections are expensive. Annual elections could lead to a higher than desirable turnover rate. But if you had them, you established it at certain years that they would be on the commission, and you had them in conjunction with local or state elections, I don't think you'd have that expense or incur that expense, correct?
It would, from my understanding and from what I would feel what would happen was that those elections would occur on the same day that the normal borough elections occur on each year.
So they could minimize any cost that's out there.
Correct, because they're going to have to hire those people to man those election booths anyway. Mm-hmm.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, well, we reserve Senate discussion when we have a joint meeting. Thank you. Scott Burgess, you're here to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Scott Burgess with the Alaska Municipal League. I think I'll reserve my comments until we have the teleconference up. That's what I thought was going to happen. I just didn't have a chance to get the sponsor when it came up on the agenda. The bill is a concern. The league is generally opposed to limitations on planning and zoning powers, which is viewed certainly as a local function. I think the CS is certainly an improvement over the original bill and that it does make it optional. But I think I will reserve, hold off on my comments because I've not gotten a lot of input. I got some input through the Mat-Su Borough and hope to get some more. My problem is, having been the former planning director in Fairbanks, I'm not sure my views are my own or of my employer, so current employer. So I think I'll wait and hear comments from other municipalities, and I just haven't had a chance to get those comments. But before I go too far, but I think the fact that the CS makes it optional, I think I can raise some other concerns, but again, I'm not sure those are my own or of the boroughs. So I think I'll just wait and see what happens at the teleconference, and we've put out the word that this bill is up and these issues are before us, and hopefully we'll get some more comments before that time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Jim Blasen.
Jim Blasen from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. I guess I would also reserve comments for later, but I did want to make clear to the committee that first-class cities and second-class cities that choose to optionally exercise planning powers, the provisions for first and second-class borough planning functions are made applicable to them. So even though in the statute it just talks about first and second-class boroughs, in the first-class and second-class city section it refers back to those provisions, so these provisions would also be made applicable to them. So just a little technical comment there.
Yeah, well, I had a concern. I was going to reserve it too, but it speaks to the functions and the proportionate representation within the borough on home rule and first-class cities, not on second-class cities. Now, home rule cities may, they do assume planning functions themselves, right? They have the three basic functions,
yeah.
Taxation, planning, and education.
Yeah, outside of boroughs. Otherwise,
the borough
has it on the area-wide basis.
The mm-hmm. So the question is, why does it refer to home rule cities within the borough specifically, just for the representation on the commission? Is
correct,
that the only purpose then?
Good example is the Fairbanks North Star
yeah.
borough. There are two cities in there, and both of them are home rule
mm-hmm.
cities.
Mm-hmm.
But the borough has the power of planning and zoning.
Okay, so it's just the only reason they are in is just so there is a provision for representations of those local government entities within the borough. Okay, thank you. Well, we just see then when that joint meeting is coming about. The prime sponsor can help us because our parallel body is run by the Republicans, so you guys got to do some footwork. We adjourn at 4:25. This is the 65th meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Today is Monday, March 28th at 3:05. Let the record show that we have Representative Collins, Herman, Zawacki, and Springer in attendance. Representative Cato is excused due to sickness. On the day's calendars, we have five bills, House Bill 318 and 319 on the Alaska Energy Efficient Home Program, House Bill 519 and House Bill 520, that is on the radon mitigation, and House Bill 522, an act relating to municipal planning and commissions. We might as well take them up in that sequence. And 318 and 319 are sister bills, and then 519 and 520 are sister bills, one being on the subject matter, the other one being the appropriations bill to accompany it. So we take up House Bill 318 and 319. That is on the Alaska Energy Efficient Home Program. We had, this is the fourth reading of that bill. We had initially introduction by the sponsor and some witnesses. We had then subsequently two full teleconferences on a statewide basis. The bill has received widespread support from everybody. And is there anybody signed up yet that wanted to testify on it? Okay, I think the only question that has come to my mind, I have not heard any testimony that did not support the bill, ultimately from the standpoint that it was a very desirable and long overdue thing. I have heard some questions in regards to the energy program that the Department of Community and Regional Affairs is implementing now. I think I heard one or two testimonies where people asked that it be delayed, and we have, I think, two or three letters in our files asking that it not be delayed. So the CS bills, the way they are written right now, 318 is a bill laying out the substance and the subject matter, and then 319 is an appropriations bill asking for state funding primarily to educate the public, the builders, the users, and get standards and all that stuff done. Is there any more discussion or any questions on it?
I did have some concerns about the implementation of the standard, and I recognize that we need to get to, say, a higher standard eventually. And I'm just wondering if I understand that the CRNA has held off implementation of their standard until October 1st. Is that right?
Well, we have Jim Blasman here from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs.
Okay. So it's been held off till October. I guess the concern that I have, and I'm not opposed to energy efficient homes.